This is Eric Sauter from Expo Imaging, and you're listening to Light Source.
And welcome to episode 38 of Light Source, the official podcast of StudioLighting.net, the website that introduces photographers to portrait and studio lighting equipment and techniques. I'm Bill Crawford, publisher.
And I'm Ed Hidden, exclusive photographer and image inspector with iStockPhoto.com. Now, on today's episode, this is going to be the white balance edition, it seems, of the Light Source. We have with us two gentlemen from Expo Imaging Incorporated. It's ExpoDisc.com. And the gentlemen that are going to be with us is Eric Sauter and John Baker. They are the, well, let's just say they're in charge of stuff going on. They're the guys that founded the company. But they talk to us a bit about their various products that they have over there. We focus a bit on the Expo Disc and white balancing and got some really interesting feedback. It's not so much just a product review. They actually talked a good bit about the art of white balancing and what you get with it and why you want to do it and why you want to take your camera off of auto and actually do a custom white balance. I know personally, I've seen big things from doing it custom-wise. Have you played with it much, Bill?
Yeah. One of the things that I was really excited about doing with this show was just sort of bringing to light, so to speak, the whole issue, because I think a lot of people don't realize how much your photos can actually be improved with taking your camera off of the auto white balance settings. And they talk a little bit about that, and there's some great examples on their website, too.
Yeah, I mean, usually I try to use the whatever the preset is on for the symbol for whatever lighting condition I'm in, but I don't know, it seems like lately I'm either under mixed lighting or it never seems to be just good enough. You know, I always find that when I custom balance it after I select a preset that I notice a marked improvement, so.
Right, this will be a good chance to explore that issue a little bit.
Very timely as well. Just a few days ago, actually March 23rd, it looks like, user, and I hope I don't mess up your name, it's Jemiah 3000. He's a member of our Flickr group. He posted that he was practicing outdoors with his Canon 4300. That'd be a big flash. 430EX flash. And he was running into some white balance issues. He was using a 30D with a white bow card, which is one of those... looks like a credit card type thing that has color neutral target values on it. And he was wondering how to do a custom white balance when using the flash with that setup. And he wanted to know, do you do the white balance before you use the flash, balance to the ambient, or do you balance when you're using your flash, firing it while you take the shot? And that's an excellent question. We do touch on it a little bit during the show, but what I've done in situations like this is I have held the gray card out there. I've shot it a couple different ways. Now, I tend to shoot raw, but I'll hold the gray card in the environment, and I'll shoot it without the flash, and then I'll shoot it with the flash. That way, I will have two references that I'll be able to use when I get back to Adobe Bridge to select, okay, whether this shot was shot with a flash or not with a flash. I'll have gray balances that I can select at post-process time.
Right. And I think when we talked with Mark Robert Halper, he actually uses that creatively in a couple of different situations. So if you're outdoors, the light oftentimes will match the light of the flash fairly well. But when you're indoors, or if you're outdoors during late evening sun or low setting sun or a sunrise or something like that, you may actually be able to choose between those and get a totally different image. You know, because the artificial light will look blue if you balance for the warm sunlight. But on the other hand, if you balance for the flash, you'll get, you know, kind of a deeper tone to the background and everything that's lit with the sun.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of different ways to use it. And actually, one other thing that I want to mention too briefly is if you're holding something in your scene and you're using your flash to fire on your gray card to get an idea of your white balance, you want to make sure that you're ambient flash is going to be equal to the amount of exposure that your flash is giving it to you at the time. Like if you hold the card like at arm's length and you take a shot with your ambient light and your flash is probably going to be, I don't know, say 90 to 95% of the exposure. But if you were shooting something that was 30, 40 feet away, say a wedding, you know, on the other end of a chapel or something, you're going to be getting far more ambient light in your exposure, and that's going to be the dominant color temperature that would be in that particular shot. So it's important when you're using that color balance reference to make sure that you do it in the majority of the light that you're going to be using.
That type of situation you describe actually lends itself really well to the product that we're going to talk about in the show today.
Exactly.
Because it's those tricky situations or when you can't get a reference card into the image or there's some reason why that would be a bad idea, the Expo Disc actually comes in really handy. So we will let our guests explain how that works.
Yeah, and I also want to thank a couple of the site members who helped this guy out with some answers before we could actually get to the show. I'm Brian Fellow. That guy's pretty thorough with his white balancing. He says he prefers to shoot raw, which I agree. And he uses an Expo Disc and sometimes even a gray tag reference. So that guy's like really, he's extra sure.
Yeah, now for people who aren't sure what a gray tag reference is, why don't you give us a little quick explanation of that?
Gray tag reference, it's a card. It's not a gray card. It's a card that has 24 different color swatches on it. It gives you a range of grays and then it gives you an RGB. And I don't even know exactly what all of the other color values are, but they actually give you a number of different values. What I've done with mine is I'll shoot a reference of the gray tag card. Then there's a script that I run in Photoshop where I specify the four corners of that card with a path. And then I run my script, and what that does is it continually opens that file in Camera Raw into Photoshop, analyzes one of those color swatches, and continues to open it until it gets to the actual color value that it really is, according to what Greytag says, or to what they've manufactured it to be. What it'll do is it'll do that for every single color swatch on there repeatedly. And it's a bit overkill to actually do that. Well, the great thing is you can just set it and, go make dinner, go get, run down to the store and get a cappuccino and come back. But when it's done, there's this Photoshop document on your screen that's a bunch of text, and it says, all right, go into Camera Raw, go to your calibrate screen, set your shadow tint value to this value, your red value to this hue and this saturation, your green to this hue and saturation, your blue to this hue and saturation. And essentially, it completely color calibrates whatever scene that you're in to what the actual known values are, which is on this card, this reference card.
And that's a big deal, especially if for example, you can't calibrate your monitor or you have, multiple monitors, you want to be sure your color is accurate from the source file, which is a little different than from whatever your viewing situation is, right?
Well, yeah, and it's especially if it's something that's going to be, like, really crucial going to print.
Or like a clothing color for a fashion photographer or something like that.
That's things like that is where it's, completely essential.
It's cool stuff.
So kind of like in the sphere of things, auto is, in my opinion, a horrible white balance to use. Next best option would be whatever symbol of light that you're using. Like if you're indoors, use that tungsten one. Or if you're at an office, use the fluorescent. Even better would be a gray card. Even better than that would be Expo Disc. Better than that would be Expo Disc and a gray tag light card. And, it's kind of funny. I've actually done tests where I've ran all of those different scenarios. And the more in-depth you get with it, you'd really be surprised how much more improved the image can look. You would think you would get to a point where it'd be like, this is fine. But if it's something that's completely color critical, you'd be surprised how much better
Sure. It
can get with the tighter reference and calibration that you get with it. So, yeah, there's...
So that'll be our challenge for this show.
Yeah, finding that happy medium of anal retentive and good color.
Folks can do some before and after stuff and see if they notice a difference.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there was also some big news this week.
Yes, there were a few things, I guess, that are kind of newsworthy. We would be badly amiss if we were a photography show that did not mention at least the announcement that Adobe made.
They made they did. They made a huge announcement. Yes, Photoshop 3. Actually, the whole new Creative Suite 3 applications have been officially announced and kind of out there on the internet that you can check into, like, all of the different specifications. Which packet?
Did you watch the video?
Which one is that?
They have the new features video. It's pretty cool. They got some really neat stuff in there.
I've been avoiding it because I can't wait for my, I think I'm going to upgrade to a Creative Suite Premium.
Yeah, there's some things that might make it worth it for some folks. I guess there'll be two editions of Photoshop. One will be your standard, and then one will be the extended, CS3 extended, which has some 3D extruding and some motion, support, but it's pretty neat. Everything looks really good from the limited amount of stuff that I saw. I'll tell you what I'm really excited about is how far Adobe Bridge has come. It looks almost like they've taken a page from the playbook of Apple in some of the features that I saw, like the loop tool that you can use now right in the window, and the side-by-side comparison, and you know, you can actually stack images that are all similar and stuff like that right inside a Bridge. So it's going to be kind of cool, I think.
They really needed to move to that functionality to it, because iView Media has a very similar compare mode, and I use Bridge a lot for making my image selections, and then I move to iView Media for my cataloging. So
right.
There's been a few things that I really like in iView that I've really wanted in Bridge, and they just haven't been there. So
that is cool.
It's nice to see how that app is progressing.
It looks like they're paying attention to photographers, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah, definitely some workflow improvement.
Well, there's also in the news, I guess there's a product that kind of snuck in there since our last show, I suppose, over at alienbees.com. I noticed that they are starting to manufacture foldable octaboxes and softboxes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I guess it would be constructed like an umbrella, so it opens and folds like an umbrella would, you know, but you have the diffuser face on there like a softbox.
Oh, that's nice.
The speed ring is built in, and if you mess with speed rings and softboxes a lot, I think that's something to really appreciate, because it's kind of a pain to break those down, and it would be nice to have something that folds up like that if you're, you know, kind of a portable shooter.
Kind of along those same lines, and a slight variation of it. Now, it's not a new product or anything like that, but I mention it because I got to play with it when I was at Philly, and it kind of flows along those same lines as this foldable one, is Calumet is selling, and I say selling because I think it's manufactured by Camera, but I'm not certain of that. They have a new style of a quick ring. It has where your rods go into your quick ring, there's a quick release button, and one half of the quick ring folds down.
Oh, that's a great
idea. The
other
half. So it just comes right around the other side, and boom, your softbox is folded in half, and you're ready to stick it in a bag.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, I sat and played with it the whole time, and all the photographers that were there, they're going, "What is that?" I'm like, "Check this out."
That is cool.
I'm like, "It's down. It's assembled. It's down. It's assembled." I sat and played with that thing for like 5 minutes. Finally, they had to take it from me. So, another quick thing, moving right along, before I talk too much about my neuroses. CameraBits.com has released a new public beta of Photo Mechanic 4.5. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Photo Mechanic, Bill. It's kind of a photo browser application, very similar to like a Bridge type program. I know that there's some benefits that some people talk about it, where it's one of the few truly multiprocessor usable browser applications, and a lot of the people that have it, you know, speak of it very highly. So if any users out there are interested in different browser software or are Photo Mechanic browser users and haven't heard about it, go ahead and check it out at CameraBits.com.
Good times.
Well, on this edition of The Light Source, we have with us a number of gentlemen from the Expo Imaging Company. It's available at expodisc.com if you want to check out the products while we're talking about them here on the show. We have with us this evening Eric Sauter and John Baker. Welcome to joining us, guys. Now, before we get too much into the show, could you tell our audience a little bit about what you guys do for Expo Imaging?
Thanks for having us on the show. This is Eric Sauter. I'm the president of Expo Imaging. John Baker and I, who will introduce himself shortly, are in charge of everything from suits to nuts here at the company. We're basically a small family business, so you name it, and we ultimately have to do it. And this is John Baker. I'm vice president. We're all chiefs and no Indians around here, and I'm also the in-house lawyer for the company, so we wear lots of different hats. But in any case, it proves to be interesting on a daily basis because of, you know, startup company, you do a little bit of everything. So our main products are, we have the Expo Disc and the Expo Aperture, and so we certainly make things that help a lot with lighting.
Well, that's good, because that's what our show is about.
Right.
You guys are definitely best known for your Expo disc. At least in my opinion, you guys are really well known for that. I actually have had a chance to play with it before and gotten some pretty cool results from it. For the people in the audience that have the tendency to leave the camera on auto, can you tell us a little bit about why somebody would want to move more towards a manual white balance setting on their camera and what they can expect to get out of making that move?
Sure. Well, auto is there strictly for convenience on a camera. And basically what auto does is it meters the scene from a distance, and then the camera tries to make some judgments from a distance. Digital cameras actually have to select a color temperature for each shot that basically represents the color of light involved in that shot. That's what white balance is. So auto white balance is one way for the camera to select that color temperature. Sometimes you get an okay result with it, but often what happens, because, again, the camera isn't metering the light at the subject's location, you get inconsistent results, and I'm sure all of you have seen that. So what the Expo disc does is it takes advantage of the feature that's built into all digital cameras and all DSLRs, which is to set a custom white balance, and that actually allows you to meter the actual color of light involved in a shot. The traditional way to do that has been to use a white card or a gray card or a target of some kind that you actually place in the scene, or have another person who's with you taking pictures place in the scene, and then you have to take a picture of it, fill the frame, and then basically select that as your custom white balance. So you're taking a reflective metering of that target. What the Expo disc does is it basically puts the process on the front of your camera and turns your camera into an incident metering tool, so you don't have to position anything out there in the world. And it's a really accurate, convenient way to get a custom white balance. You basically position your camera with the Expo disc, so the light illuminating your subject hits the front of the Expo disc, and then you go through your normal custom white balance procedure, which is really quick on most cameras. You know, it's 5 seconds, 10 seconds, something like that. And you get a really nice, accurate white balance that's a real quick process to do. So you'll be more likely to actually take a custom white balance instead of using the auto setting, which is more inconsistent.
Yeah. In a nutshell, basically you gain consistency. You know, as John has just talked about, consistency is a problem when you're relying on the camera to make judgments based upon what fills the frame. As you change what's in the frame, the camera makes different judgments. But when you take control yourself, you give yourself the opportunity to create consistently better results and to gain a lot of consistency, which ultimately reduces the amount of workflow involved.
Well, speaking of consistency, I shot a wedding this past weekend, and I had a couple times where the white balance shifted on me a little bit, and I'm noticing that where I had the white balance set to a specific setting, it's much easier to do my batch corrections because I can set one setting for all of them and apply it throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the Expo disc, you gain the consistency of a custom white balance, but the other advantage that you have over using camera presets, which would be the other way to gain consistency, is you're actually metering the color of light involved in the shot. When you select the presets on your camera, basically all you're selecting is a color temperature of light. So if you, for instance, you select the fluorescent preset, that's one color temperature. If you select the tungsten preset, that's another color temperature. And they're fixed temperatures, so to the extent the actual scene that you're shooting in is a different color temperature, you're going to see a shift. So while you can still do batch corrections, the advantage of the Expo disc over those presets is that you've actually metered for the color of light, so your starting point is going to be accurate rather than having to move it.
Now, so during a complex environment like a wedding, for example, you still need to be sure to put the disc on and recalibrate if you change, like if you come inside from outside or something, right?
So correct. Absolutely, because that's why it works.
Right. And the difference between that and a gray card would be you're not having to ask like a model to hold it. You're not trying to, in fact, a lot of people use the gray card to come back to the studio and do their calibration and post-processing. So this kind of eliminates that need as well.
It eliminates
if you set
all of that,
right.
Yep.
Right. It's essentially taking the idea of the gray card and putting it in a much more convenient and durable form factor. Most of our customers at some point come back to us and tell us that they were relying on some of the camera's automatic features in their photography and they weren't happy with the results. They know they should be setting a custom white balance, but they weren't doing it because it was simply too inconvenient to use the cards or targets that are available. But what they found with the Expo disc is it's so small and compact, there's no reason not to have it on you. you just pop it in the pouch that it comes with, or it hangs on the neck strap. When you come into an environment where it's like, okay, I'm going to set a custom white balance, it's simple enough just to pop it over to the end of the lens. You do the camera procedure, you take it off. The whole process takes maybe 5 or 10 seconds, and you're done. At that point, you have manually adjusted your camera to compensate for the exact color temperature or light that you're in, so that later, when you download your batch of images, not only are they consistent from the first to the last in that lighting environment, but you can download them in a shot with accurate color, and that just represents such a huge time savings.
And it probably makes it a lot easier as well if you're in a situation where you're stuck with having to use JPEG as opposed to RAW.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it works great with RAW. It gives you a nice as-shot white balance, but with JPEGs, it's absolutely critical because you've basically embedded the color data into your image at the time that the camera processes that image in camera. So you've really got to get the color right with JPEGs.
What would be some advantages? I can already imagine some if you have models in your shot, but how well does this product work in the studio environment?
It works just as well in a studio environment as it does out on the fly. You know, one of the advantages of the studio is that because you're not having to ask a model or your subject to hold a card, you can essentially take care of it yourself. You're able to work more in the flow. You know, you can set it once. If you change your lighting setup or change whatever environment you're in, you can very quickly set it again without creating this distraction by dragging out a card or a target. You know, we've heard a lot from customers who say, gosh, I had my subject try and hold the card and it didn't have it angled right and it picked up some of the red off their sweater, or, you know, that some of these kinds of problems you can eliminate simply by, you know, you put it on the end of the lens and you control the camera yourself. So it just simplifies the whole process.
I was just thinking through like a product photography environment where if you have an elaborate product setup, sometimes you don't want to introduce, you know, one of those fold-up gray cards or even a Macbeth card or anything like that, because you run a risk of messing up your entire setup. So this could come in really
handy. There you go. If you've got the 10 million dominoes
right.
perfectly, knocking them all over with the gray card might be a real problem.
So that is pretty cool.
I think I probably see an even bigger advantage of this for like the landscape photographer. You know, if you're shooting something that's, you know, encompassing a quarter, half, or 1 mile, you know, it's like, well, walking out there with your gray card is not very feasible.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I got an interesting email, and we actually get these emails pretty frequently, but this one happened to come from someone who has got a pretty good name for themselves. And, you know, we've been in business and retail for about 3 years, and about 3 years ago, a colleague of mine went to a photo show, and he you know, handed out a couple of samples to some noted photographers to try to get them to try it, to, you know, use it and like it and, you know, endorse us, you know, all those kinds of things. But so I got this email from one of these individuals who never responded to us after that, and he said that he just got back from a trip from Antarctica, where he went with a couple of other photographers, and for some reason, and I really haven't been able to ask him why yet, he decided to drag out his Expo disc and give it a test. And he said he tested it against a lot of other cards or targets available, and not only did ours perform consistently well, but very accurately, even in that kind of an environment. So it was a great pleasure to receive that, but he said he put it through the paces, and you know, it was what he chose to use in that environment. So
that's great. Let me just ask a question before we get too far along here. We talked about DSLRs, and it's my understanding, let's talk about how this physically works. You screw this product to the front of a lens.
Well, actually, what we've done is we've put a pressure mount bearing on the front of it, so you don't actually have to screw it in and out of the threads. It would be very inconvenient to have to do that. So there's a lanyard, optional lanyard attachment and lanyard that come with it, and then it just pops in and out of the front of the lens, so you don't actually have to screw it on and off.
Great. And if I don't have a DSLR, then what?
Well, you can use it with other cameras. I mean, rangefinder cameras with smaller lens sizes like Leicas. You can use it with a point-and-shoot camera if you wanted to. What you can do if you have a really, really small lens, is you can actually get a larger size Expo disc and just hold it flush over the front of a smaller lens, and it works fine. As long as the camera has the capability to do a custom white balance, it's going to work fine. you know, the biggest obstacle to people using it with a point-and-shoot is usually that that's not the kind of camera that people are interested in doing any kind of manual settings with. You know,
right.
They just want to pull it out and press the shutter button and have it take a shot regardless of what they get. So there's definitely a crossover market now where there's kind of the prosumer cameras that have a lot of DSLR capabilities but aren't classified as DSLRs, and certainly those people would be prime candidates for using an Expo disc.
Now, a lot of times I hear people saying to either just get a gray card or to just use a white sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I always caution them against doing that, well, because I've heard of even like an 18% photo gray card isn't necessarily color neutral, and that's really the important thing here is getting the color neutrality, correct?
Right. It doesn't actually, as far as you'll see some manuals talk about a white card and some talk about a gray card, but really the issue is it neutral? Does it reflect an equal amount of, you know, red, green, and blue light? So that's the issue. It could be anywhere along the spectrum. 18% is kind of a magic number that came up historically in photography that was significant for exposure primarily in the zone system and all that. So that's where that magic number came from. But for purposes of white balance, it's really the neutrality that's important, which is why a white piece of paper is often not an ideal tool, because a white piece of paper isn't calibrated to be actually neutral. You know, it has pigment in it. It's not exactly neutral. Plus, some cameras, basically when you're dealing with a white object, you risk going out of the exposure range for that as opposed to something that's darker. So that's another issue with that. You know, and you still have the same reflectivity issues and everything that you'd have with a card or a target.
It's also very easy to overexpose a white object. And, you know, cards and targets, even if they are perfectly neutral when you pull it out of the bag, if you read the small print, you know, the recommendation is that you replace them on a monthly basis. Well, the reason for that is because they're affected by light in the environment. You know, it's not color fast, and they gradually change color over time, or they get dirty, or again, they're just not so inconvenient. You could hold up a piece of white paper, but, you know, you're getting light coming through it. You know, your eye is, and what your brain do is effectively force things to white. It's compensating for things that may not even be white. So there's all those variables that come into play when you're trying to find a neutral service to use for a custom white balance.
Those are some great points. So aiming at a white wall is probably even worse. I think that was what my manual said.
White wall or an eggshell white wall? look at how many descriptors for white you're going to find if you go down to your local Home Depot and buy some white paint. So
sure, and then the white wall is really only reflecting white that's reflecting off of it. Unless you're standing your subject directly in front of the white wall, your subject is probably going to be affected by different variables in the environment.
Sure. And the same would be true for a seamless background, too. So, because I know a couple of guys have just said, just blur out the seamless and go from there.
Yeah, the same issues. And you know, the other interesting thing about all of this is when you take a shot by itself without comparing it to anything else, you know, your first reaction to it may be, oh, gosh, you know, that color is okay, or I don't really notice with that shot. But then once you compare it to a shot that actually has an accurate white balance, you go, wow, okay, that's the way the color is supposed to look. So
right.
I think that's one key consideration when you judge these kind of things.
And you guys have some really great examples on your website. You know, side by side, you can see with the auto setting and then the setting taken from the Expo disc. I think that's really helpful for people that are curious about this.
Sure, it just gives you some typical kind of situations where, you know, the camera may not have given you the best result. So.
Yeah, we're just trying to demonstrate how, you know, inconsistent color can be. I mean, you know, they wouldn't be selling as many digital cameras if they didn't take good pictures. But the fact is that the pictures can always be better, and sometimes they can be a lot better.
Sure.
You know, by putting all those images up there, what we're trying to do is provide a reference point for somebody to say, like, I've taken that shot. Wow, you mean I could have gotten
right?
So that's really the idea.
And well, they wouldn't be building a custom white balance function into all of these cameras if there weren't an advantage to using it.
Absolutely. Now, tell me about the portrait version of the Expo disc.
The portrait version is really a filter that we came up with because we kept hearing back from customers who, you know, they set a custom white balance, but, you know, they're in the film days, they're used to shooting through an 81A filter. They're not used to what real neutral looks like, and so they tend to want to warm skin tones up a little bit. So what we did was is that we designed a variation of the Expo disc that essentially passes more blue light than what neutral really is. And so it tricks the camera into compensating for that by amplifying the red color channel. And so what this is going to do is apply effectively what would amount to about an 81A warming to your whole image file. You know, it's a little bit more pink than yellow. We did some testing and found that a lot of 81A filters tend to add equal amounts of red and green, which can create a yellowing effect. And we deliberately tried to go the other way, and we wanted it to be a little bit more pink. So the result is when you use it, you end up with a little bit of a pinkish tone in the cheeks. It also tends to throw a little red highlights into the hair, you know, if you've got a hair light and so forth. So yeah, specifically to target a portrait photographer because it's just beautiful in skin tones, that's why we named it Portrait Filter.
That is cool.
So with this warming filter solution for portraits, would that apply to every pigment of skin tone, even people that are like very dark complected or, say, an olive complexion?
Yes, absolutely. It provides a really nice effect regardless of your complexion. I mean, we have some samples. I don't know if we put them up on our site. We have some portraits, some African-American portraits. We have other portraits where it shows a variety of complexions, and it is a really nice effect regardless. And in general, portrait work, again, the portrait photographer likes to add a little bit of warming for skin tones. And so, again, if you're using it for a shot that isn't a portrait shot, you're going to want to take that into consideration, too. If you're a wedding photographer and you're shooting a white wedding dress, you wouldn't want to use this because it's going to add that warming to the entire image. But for skin tones, it is really nice effect.
What you'll find is we get a question about the portrait filter quite a bit. And, you know, a good way to also describe it is that, look, you're essentially you're setting a custom white balance. That part is the same. But what you're doing in camera after that is that you're adding the same amount of red and green to the image file after your custom white balance. So you're going to get the same degree of warming regardless of your subject and regardless of the lighting condition that you're shooting. And it's always going to be a little bit warmer than that same amount of warmth over what neutral is. So whether you're shooting lighter or darker skinned people, you're going to see a little bit of pink on the image file.
Well, that actually leads me to a kind of related question, I guess. Actually, you just kind of have me curious. Do you recommend if someone is already shooting with filters, do they need to remove their filters before they do their custom white balance?
It's the Expo disc works well over the top of UV filters or a polarizer, circular polarizer. If you're shooting through a skylight filter, which will add a little warming to the image, setting a custom white balance with an Expo disc over the top of that will effectively neutralize that warming. So if you're not prepared for that, it might be a surprise.
Right.
Yeah, it will essentially compensate for the color cast that is being added to a filter under it. So it will remove the effect of the filter that you may be seeking to add. If you take the colored filter off first, set the white balance, and then add the filter on, you would be adding that effect.
Right.
Great.
Well, I have a really tough question for you guys. I get this question asked a lot from my friends. I don't know why they tend to confuse me with the really hard questions, it seems. If you are shooting, say, an image where there's a sunset or something that has a strong color cast to it, and like you said, this product would neutralize that effect, how do you suggest that a photographer white balance in a scene like that where they want to kind of preserve what they're actually seeing but not necessarily neutralizing it?
The same would be true with gels in a studio, I guess, too.
The first question I always ask myself is whether or not I want to set a custom white balance. You know, if you're shooting a scene that has a strong color tone to it that you want to preserve, setting a custom white balance to you're effectively asking the camera to remove that which you're trying to preserve, or that you're trying to capture. At a sunset or a sunrise, I will frequently put the camera on the sun preset in the camera, which effectively fixes the camera to a white light calibration. So any deviation from white light, the camera is going to record as that color as it is. So if you're shooting at sunrise or sunset and it's golden or it's red or whatever color, that color is really going to come through very strong on your image.
Yeah, in a sunset, I mean, one way to think about it is your subject is actually the colored light. So to basically compensate against what your subject is, may not be the best artistic choice in that shot.
Now, having said that, we have another photographer who sent us almost a testimonial, and he said he likes to shoot in the morning light because he loves that light, and now since he's found the Expo Disc, he can finally capture the light the way he sees it. I haven't spoken with him personally since he made that comment, but I'm very curious to find out what exactly he meant by that, you know, if we're talking about the same thing or if it's simply he's found a way to remove that blue cast from early morning lighting environment.
That's cool.
We've talked about the Expo Disc for digital SLRs. Now, poking around the site, I see that you have a video product as well.
The video product is actually the same filter. We do make it in a few different form factors that specifically address the form that lenses take on video cameras. So, for instance, we make a flat version that's square for video matte boxes. We make a 4x4 version. But a lot of the digital HD cameras now are fairly common lens sizes. So, for instance, the 72 and 82 millimeter Expo Disc, just like the one you'd use for still photography, are also popular video sizes, and it's the same product. So it's a market that we haven't really pursued in the beginning of the company, but now we're really looking to work more with videographers because obviously they're used to having to move quickly through environments, and the convenience of being able to use an Expo Disc is really critical for the kind of work they do.
Well, you mentioned that you have various diameter Expo Discs. Is that if I have multiple lens diameters in my camera bag, I should purchase a separate Expo Disc for each size?
What you can do is get the one that fits the biggest lens you have, and you can actually, it's nice for the lens it fits. As I said, there's a pressure mount, but it will actually fit over smaller lenses if you hold it flush, so it works fine. What we find is, you know, people are first working with this, that's the path they'll take, you know, they'll get the one that fits the biggest lens, and then a lot of pros and avid amateurs, after they really get used to having this in the workflow, they'll go and they'll basically get them for the lenses they use real commonly, and then just keep them over the front of the lens in their bag so it's always ready to go. So, but, you know, certainly starting out with it, get the one that fits your biggest lens.
And I guess you guys have another product that is also pretty interesting. Do you want to mention that product as well?
You're talking about the new Expo Aperture Depth of Field Guide?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you. Well, the Expo Aperture Depth of Field Guide is also something that was originally the idea of my grandfather's, and what he wanted to do was, he was a lifelong student of photography. He wanted to find a way to teach his photography students how to master both exposure control, but also, and thus the original concept of the Expo Disc, but also depth of field control, so that they would learn much more quickly the concept and be able to get the images that they want much more quickly. And depth of field is something that I think a lot of people struggle with. And so what he came up with was a tool that, interestingly enough, the more you use it, the less you need it. And the reason for that is that through using this, it's essentially a small circular slide rule, you're able to visually see the relationship between your focal length and your aperture and your subject distance, so that it's much easier to learn. It's in your hands as you're using it. It just takes a few seconds to determine which aperture you use or what your depth of field is going to be. So the idea being that, one, you can pick it up as a student of photography. There's a lot of information there that talks about depth of field and circles of confusion, and it gets very technical if you want it. Or if not, it's simply a tool that you can use to, again, determine the aperture to use to get your selective focus or your depth of field.
So it's an educational tool then?
It's an educational tool. What I find is that I've got it in my bag, and other people who are using it, you pick it up, you begin to use it. It's a nice reference tool to have. You learn the relationships, but because it's so small and convenient and quick, it's easy to pull out and say, what am I going to get here? Oh, yeah. Or what should my aperture be? Oh, yeah. and then, you know, it goes away in the bag again. And so it's actually come in pretty handy a number of times, and you know, we hear this back. So for $29.95, it's one of those items that can really help you set up or save a shot.
Well, when we talk to people about choosing an aperture in a studio setting, oftentimes that is exactly what's determining the aperture you use for the shooting aperture, is the depth of field that you're after. I mean, of course, the light and power of your lights as well, but would that be something that perhaps would help somebody that's trying to get their subject in focus, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, basically what you can do is you can say, gosh, I know where my subject is, I know what the focal length I want to shoot is, and then it'll let you determine exactly what aperture you need to figure out what's going to be in focus. The other thing that we've done with this is one other issue with depth of field that's arisen with all the new digital cameras that have come out is that you have a variety of sensor sizes now,
right,
film formats. And so the depth of field guide actually has an adjustment and has a chart where you can basically dial in your crop factor for your given camera. So, for instance, all the Nikons are a 1.5 time crop factor, and so you just dial that in, and it will actually compensate for that in determining your depth of field. So
that's very cool.
We tried to keep it up with the times. The other thing that may be of interest to studio photographers is that we've also, and you know, obviously other people who do macro work, but we've also put a macro scale on it. So you can, if you're doing macro work, you just look on the other scale, and you can look basically at depth of field in inches rather than feet. So that's another useful aspect to the tool.
That's great. You need to know the focal length of the lens, correct?
Yeah, what you want to do is you want to use the actual focal length that you're shooting with, not any kind of crop factor adjusted focal length. So you just figure out what your focal length is, and you dial that in. The dial itself is color-coded, so you just look for the window with the focal length. You put that in there, and then you can figure out your aperture and your depth of field.
Yeah. In a studio or in any shooting environment, you know, you sit down and you think, what's my subject, what's in focus, and what do I want my depth of? Do I want the background in focus, or do I want the foreground, or these kinds of things? How do you decide what aperture to use?
Right.
I think most people just take a wild guess, and if you guess wrong, you easily end up with too much or too little in focus, or you throw away film speed, or not film speed, you know, shutter speed.
ISO, yeah.
And you can have less sharp images because you're wasting shutter speed. So
right.
Here's a way to quickly determine exactly what you should use for what you want, and that way you can maximize your shutter speed and, from a general concept, reduce the amount of blurriness in your images. So
yeah, many shooters will go to extremes if they're just trying to do it off the top of their head. So they'll go, I'll just open the aperture all the way up or stop it all the way down and and go that way.
That doesn't work?
No. Well, you know, it's funny because Ed and I, we always find ourselves trying to explain to people why you should choose, you know, if you're getting serious about your lighting, why you should choose strobes versus continuous lights. And we often point people to the fact that you can get a greater depth of field with a strobe. So, for example, if your subject is our children, you want to have a good two or three.
Fast-moving children.
Yeah, fast-moving children. Well, they all are. Yeah.
I said that's redundant.
Right. So you want to have, you know, that 2 or 3 feet that is going to be in focus at least, or pretty sharp, when you have the risk of your subject moving, and you need the larger aperture numbers in order to achieve that. So a tool like this would be handy for that as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. And for that kind of work, you know, often you want to do a shot where your subject is in really sharp focus and you've got a nicely blurred background, and really the only way to achieve that is with depth of field control.
It's pretty cool.
You guys should market this with depth of field tape, that way that you can put it on the set.
There you go.
For when you have kids, and that way you can say to the parent, all right, just keep them in the depth
right
of field
there,
box.
That's right.
That's right. It comes with a handy little tape measure.
Right. That's very cool.
I'm liking that idea.
I probably should have asked this before, but I noticed on your website there was a gentleman discussing dust mapping. Is that an advantage that you've discovered with the ExpoDisc you might want to talk about?
With digital photography, I mean, I think that people are pretty well aware of dust as a problem. Anytime you swap a lens, you expose the sensor or the or the low pass filter over the sensor to dust. And you know, particularly because it's a charged environment in there, you know, it just attracts dust. So with the Expo disc, you can simply put the disc over the end of the lens, zoom out, stop the lens down to maybe f16 or f22 and take a shot. And any dust that shows up on your sensor is going to show up through the Expo disc. What people traditionally have done is they'll go outside and look for a blue sky, but if you can't go outside or if it's dark or for whatever reason you don't have a perfectly uniform surface that doesn't have any variation in it, you know, the Expo disc just comes in real handy. You can use any light source. Just put the camera on an aperture priority mode and it's going to expose properly through the disc and you'll immediately be able to see if you need to clean your sensor.
That's a neat
which
idea.
Which is another thing that didn't really come up in the Expo disc discussion, but the Expo disc does pass 18% of the light through it, which is why you'd end up with a good exposure there under the program mode. So you can actually use the Expo disc to set an incident exposure as well. It basically turns your camera into an incident exposure meter rather than a reflective meter. So
that's
there's another use for the Expo disc. That was actually the original intended use for the Expo disc back in the days of film shooting was to use it as an incident exposure tool.
That is very interesting. So let me ask you, when you use it as an incident meter, essentially, then you would want to point it at your light source or at least toward the camera position.
You effectively use it the same way.
That's very cool.
With the same shot, you can essentially meter for exposure and color balance in the same process.
That's great.
When you do your custom white balance shot with the Expo disc, and you're saying that it does the 18% gray, provided you're on like the auto mode or you don't underexpose wildly or something like that, does that help your exposure at all? Because that was the one thing I noticed when I tested it out. I was in a fluorescent environment, and it seemed like I had a better exposure from my custom white balance that I used with the Expo disc than I did at fluorescent setting.
Well, I think that in a custom white balance procedure, your camera is essentially amplifying some combination of the red, green, and blue color channels to bring the color into balance. So conceptually, if you think, okay, I'm boosting blue and I'm boosting green to come into balance with red, if in an exposure your overall values are either higher or lower, if you're amplifying two of the three values, you are going to have some effect on your overall exposure. So in that sense, I think there is a relationship, even though it's a totally separate procedure in the camera. I think there is some effect there, but you know the degree to which is really dependent upon the scene or the shot.
That was my perception when I got to test out a friend of mine's. I was pretty impressed with it because it, like I said, I was really shocked that it was working better than just my custom white balance cards that I have carried around.
Happy to hear that.
Yeah. I think this has been really educational for me, and I certainly imagine that a lot of our listeners are going to be very interested in this product too, just based on maybe being exposed to it for the first time. Where can they go to purchase the Expo disc or the aperture guide for that matter?
We sell through dealers. We're the distributor in the United States, and then we sell through distributors worldwide. So your local camera store or whoever you normally shop through will almost certainly carry it. If you go to our website and you go to the Where to Buy page, you will see a list of all the dealers and distributors, and you can find it that way.
Great. And what if somebody is looking for a chance to get their hands on one of these? Are you guys going to be doing any trade shows or anything like that in the near future that we can tell them about?
Yeah, we're going to be We're going to be at WPPI, what this show will be.
which will be and already has happened, depending on whether
right.
you look at it from our time frame right. now or when the show's broadcast.
We're going to be at Photoshop World in Boston in early April, followed up by the NAB, or the National Association of Broadcasters, show in Las Vegas in mid-April. And then in late April, we will actually be at the Texas School of Photography down in College Station, Texas, working with the photography school there to help get the word out.
That's great.
Oh, and finally, I guess, we're also part of the Tamron Workshop Series for 2007, where if you can either find it on our own website at expodisc.com or through the Tamron Worksite, but We have provided a number of demo units to be used by the workshop participants during the course of these two-day events throughout the U.S. and throughout the year. So there'll actually be some hands-on instruction available.
That is outstanding. Well, guys, we've been talking for a little while here, and we really appreciate you taking the time out to come and talk to our audience and fill us in on how this product works. It sounds like a remarkable product.
All right, excellent.
Right. Well, make sure you head on over to expodisc.com to check out this product lineup. And we really, again, appreciate your time, guys, tonight.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to be on your show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I would like to dedicate this show to someone who is very important in photography and who has just left this world. Monty Zucker passed away this past week.
He's been such a driving force in the education industry and all that.
Monty was a great portrait photographer who was really, really dedicated to helping people and teaching people. He was a great teacher. You can still get to a lot of his resources. MontyZucker.com.
Zuga.net.
Zuga.net.
He was at least some version of instrumental in either participating with it or actually creative with it.
He's leaving behind him a great legacy. I mean, the guy was... In 2002, I guess he was honored by the United Nations as Portrait Photographer of the Year, which is...
That's pretty honorable.
That is a cool achievement. So, sorry to see that, but there's a lot of great resources because of him. So we'd just like to dedicate this episode to Monty.
Yep.
Check out this show and more great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com. photocastnetwork.com.